This is Gary Wakefield, and you're listening to Queer Life Stories. This episode is being released in time for International Transgender Day of Visibility, a day dedicated to celebrating transgender people around the world and the courage it takes to live openly and authentically, while also raising awareness around the discrimination trans people still face. While the visibility of transgender people is increasing in popular culture and daily life, there is still severe discrimination, stigma, and inequality. 80% of gender-questioning young Australians experience public insult, 20% of that being explicit threats, and 18% being physical abuse. Trans people are more likely to be sexually assaulted or be victims of domestic violence, more likely to self-harm or attempt suicide, more likely to be unemployed or unable to sustain employment, more likely to live on or under the poverty line, and face barriers to obtain proper healthcare and identity documents. These concerns are even higher if you're a trans person of colour. The fight for equality in Australia for queer people is far from over, and the queer community needs to stand together and support those who are most vulnerable within, and to fight to ensure that no one is left behind. If you're struggling with your mental health, please contact Lifeline on 13 1114 or Beyond Blue on 1300 224636. Both services are available 24/7.
I'm Leah, I'm 21, I'm a transgender woman and bisexual. My family grew up, well, I was born in Queensland and we moved to Goulburn for a year when I was about 5, and then we moved here and I was living here going through primary school and high school up until about 16. 16, I lived with my grandparents in Queensland for a year to finish grade 12 because school was getting a lot, and I felt like I just needed a bit of a break, bit of living life sort of thing. And then I moved back here and yeah, that's where I've stayed. I went through Marsden High School, which was a challenge at best of times. Grew up in Burnie mainly, yeah. All my family, they live in Queensland, so it was just my parents and I, and my sister moved here. So I have both set of my grandparents and all my aunties and uncles and extended family. My family is a very big family. My nan is 1 of 10, and the same with my dad's dad, who's 1 of 10 as well. So we have a very big family all across Queensland. We even have some family in America. I value my family a lot. They were very important with me growing up, even if they weren't around all the time. My granddad's sister transitioned 10 or 15 years ago, so I wasn't the first one. She was a parent and was at an older age, and so she transitioned, so it wasn't, I wasn't the first one, so it was kind of, everybody kind of knew what it meant, but being that I was of a younger age and coming to terms with it and being open about it, it made it different. All my family are very accepting. As long as it makes me happy, they're happy, basically. I have actually just noticed in the last couple of months that they're starting to use correct pronouns and starting using Leah, which is really, really good. All my family live in Queensland, basically, except us. My parents and I, we're in a good place at the moment. We've never really ever been bad, but when growing up and not having kind of a queer support group, it made it a little bit more, kind of made the pressure on my parents to know what to do, which sometimes, you know, I'm very grateful that my parents were accepting and allowed me to express myself in the best way possible, even when they didn't understand and were like, oh, do you need to do that? They kind of were never like, you can't. They still allowed me to do that. I kind of came into the fruition of understanding that I wasn't just a gay man at about 15, 16. I tried to play around with the idea of being gender fluid, but I kind of came to terms at about 18 and realized that that it wasn't that I wasn't not a boy, I wasn't a boy, it was more, you know, it wasn't that I wasn't a boy, but I was never one to start with. I remember didn't know how to verbalize it, even though my family all knew what trans was. I didn't know how to verbalize it to my parents because I'd just come home and I was just like, oh God, what's going to happen? And it's always that fear that you never know what the reaction will be. So I wrote a letter to both my mum and dad, ran to the toilet, hid for a little bit and came back. And my dad just gave me a hug and I just remember crying because I was just like, you know, my dad has been very supportive and I probably don't give him enough credit. Mums are usually a little bit more understanding with any kind of anything like that, but my dad has definitely made me more aware that there are some good men out there. You know, that he is learning, he's trying, which is better than a lot of other parents do. And so I'm very grateful because even if he doesn't understand it, he still allows it. And not necessarily allows it, but respects that that's the journey that I'm going on. And he's happy to help me in whatever way possible. And he's always been like that, always said that, you know, he's here to support me as long as it's gonna make me happy. And both my grandparents are really good. My nan is very supportive. My granddad's very supportive. My mama is very much, she's just like, as long as you're happy, you know, I try to talk to her about it. And sometimes she's probably just like, doesn't get it. It kind of goes over her head with things. But she, she's always been sort of someone that I've aspired to. And I remember in grade 7, we had to write, a story about who our hero was, and I wrote it about her. She's always had a very special place in my heart, and so she my family are pretty amazing. I'm very grateful, and we all kind of get each other, you know. We all come sort of have different interests and likes and what we do, but we all definitely, my family have definitely molded me into the way that I am. My family are, we're really good. I'm very grateful that I have my family. But no, I mean, my family have always been very politically, that's what they've discussed and, you know, that sort of thing, but they never really brought up gender issues or sexuality to me directly. I think, when I came out as gay at 14, they were kind of like, okay, what do we do now? You know, my family, my parents weren't necessarily directly involved with what queer society and community was, sort of thing. They accepted that that was a part of people's lives, but they'd never really kind of got directly involved with it, I suppose. So they never really discussed it. I tried bringing it up, you know, transitioning and things like that. And I think it was just they didn't know about it, so it was hard for them to have a discussion about. And you know, even now I still try talking to them, and sometimes they're just like, you know, I say to them, oh, you know, I feel very maternal. And my dad's like, maternal? I'm like, yeah, I don't have paternal feelings. I have maternal feelings. And so it's, but no, they never really discussed it. I remember when the marriage equality plebiscite came out, you know, and even with Trump elections and things like that, I remember trying to discuss those issues with my parents, and you know, them kind of being like, well, you just got to accept other people have different views. And I was just like, no, that's not necessarily how that works. But they definitely that outlook, I've been able to become more of an empathetic person. Not in regards to like homophobia and things like that. I think that people who are homophobic are just dumb. But with any kind of different politics, I try to listen. You know, we never really discussed it in depth. We do try now, but I think it's still that thing is that they either don't know about it or they're of the belief that sometimes I focus too much on it. That's something that I discuss a lot of, but I'm like, well, that's a part of who I am. It's not because I'm fixated on my sexuality or my gender expression. It's also just a part of the person that I am, and very open and discuss things very openly with people about issues and anything really in general. But yeah, no, we never really discussed it, no. Well, at 14, I didn't have any real experience into what being gay was. I remember coming from a little country school and then got to high school, and the first thing everybody said was to me, oh, you're gay. And so when you have people telling you that all the time, you kind of just think, oh. And I knew that I was attracted to men, but I also knew that I was attracted to women at the same time, you know, like when you're 12, 13, you know, dating is kind of just like you're learning things. But I always still remembered being very attracted to the idea of women, but because I was persuaded so much, because I was obviously very feminine, and I remember just in high school people literally just forcing it into that box. And you know, if I didn't have that, I would have been able to just, you know, be able to, because there's lots of girls that I dated when I was in high school, and I would say to myself, I probably could still date now, you know. But yeah, no, when I came out, it was definitely it didn't feel like I was still right. You know, no, it still didn't feel like that lift was off. I felt that when I came out as trans, I felt that alleviation of it. But when I came out as gay, I was still had no idea what sexuality was. You know, my parents knew what gay was, but they, I think, because obviously I was still trans, I was still very much quite feminine in expression, and the way that I dressed myself, even at 14, it wasn't female's clothes, but I still liked the idea of that. And so I think for them it was very much, they didn't see the exposure that not, you know, that other people were doing the same thing as me, or were other people were doing differently to me. So they thought, well, then why can't you be like them? Which is, I think, was just a defense. You know, they tried to make sure that I was protected and safe, because when you're kind of the only person visible, it kind of puts, not necessarily a target, but it makes you, yeah, more visible, basically. Makes you kind of, and it was, I remember one of my biggest tormentors in high school was another gay guy, and I was just like, we are very much the same. We do theatre, we do the same classes, you're literally the same height as me. Like, why does it have to be that, you know, pressure, because I'm not them. So through high school, I was very much, I still tried to be, I think about grade 10 and 11, I started distancing myself, because people still would gravitate into the idea that I was this gay guy, and, you know, why didn't I do what they did, and why don't, and I was like, well, that's not the person that I was or am. But yeah. School was difficult. Grade 7 to 10 was just quite, you know, you're just learning who you are and things like that. I remember at the end of grade 10, I just got out of a really, really difficult, exhausting, emotionally draining relationship, and I kind of went into grade 11 being like, what am I doing? Because when you go through something really difficult like that at like 15, you're like, oh my god, what am I doing? And so I kind of got into a depression slump at about grade 11, and so I kind of started isolating myself and become hanging out in the libraries, being friends with librarians, which was really good. I made lifelong friends with librarians and things like that, and some other friends as well. I was still doing theatre, trying to find friends that I didn't necessarily go to school with. But school was difficult. Grade 10 and 11 were definitely the years where I struggled. I went from being an average A, B student to about a C level student, because that's when I started becoming very anxiety ridden, I think even just remembering as a child, I've always been that very attention to detail, very paranoid, making sure everything is correct so it's all right, sort of kid. My anxiety got really bad. I was very depressed in grade 11. At that time, grade 11, I think, was when they were starting to announce, 2015, it would have been, starting to talk about the marriage plebiscite. And our school and this church that it was associated with were getting involved with the It's Okay to Vote No thing. And I used to remember grade 10 and 11, everybody saying that, you know, they're okay with me being gay, but, you know, I couldn't hold hands with my partner. We had to leave room for Jesus. Yet, all the other straight kids were able to do their thing. And I was strong enough to say, well, that's not okay. I remember people being uncomfortable with the way that I spoke about things, even though they were the ones asking questions. And other people complaining. But then when the tables were turned and some straight person wanted to speak about their experiences, everybody didn't bat an eye. You know, he's just a dude, that's what they do. And I'm just like, well, what's the difference? There's no difference. And I think that's why I became a little bit isolated in grade 11, because it made me feel like it was me against them sort of feeling. But then when I went to grade 12 and I moved to Queensland, things started to turn around. I started meeting people who were really accepting. I started dating somebody in grade 12 and that didn't work out. And so that wasn't necessarily the big thing in grade 12. I just remember going to the school and all the teachers and everybody not just accepted me as a queer person, but just as me, as my personality, the way that I was doing really well at school. I was doing 6 subjects in grade 12 and 4 pre-tertiary subjects, and I wasn't even getting an ATAR. So I was like still doing all these really hard subjects for basically no reason. But I was doing really well. I was getting all the leads in the school plays. I came up with ideas for shows. They asked me to co-direct a school production that was going to go be seen by other schools. You know, I was doing really well in grade 12, which I think when you're in a good mindset and you know that you're safe and you're comfortable and you're okay, you know, it made me feel more relaxed and able to be, well, now I can focus on school because I know that I'm safe. I'm not having to fight to be valued as a person, you know, which it was like at Marist. I had to fight to be seen as valid. And good thing with me moving as well, I also made a lot of internet friends, because when I didn't know how to meet people here, especially in like grade 11, you can't use like dating sites or anything. Well, not supposed to be. I remember just becoming friends with a lot of people who lived in Brisbane, and I knew that that's where I was going. And I have made some really long, lifelong friends through the internet, basically just adding them on Facebook or, you know, having an interest in something and being able to communicate that. You know, I made some really, really good friends who have always been really supportive through my transition, through everything. Some of them I still haven't even met yet, even though I lived in Queensland for a year and then I've been there multiple times back and still haven't had the chance to see them. Through the end of grade 12, I those feelings of still not knowing who I was started to set back in. I knew I was coming back home. I decided that I wasn't going to uni. I couldn't find any jobs. I was like, well, at least if I'm back with my parents, at least I know that that's, you know, somewhere comfortable. And I was kind of just like, still didn't know what I wanted to do, where I wanted to go, what was going to happen. And so I, for the first time, started getting into doing makeup and expressing myself through that, and my nan actually let me use some of her makeup for my grade 12 formal. And that was the first time that I really felt comfortable. You know, I was still wearing a suit, you know, still wearing boy clothes, but I felt a kind of, it was one of those moments where I was like, oh, that was kind of clicked. So then when I moved back home, I moved back home a week before my birthday. And so when it was my birthday, I got money. I was like, right, I'm going to go to Kmart. I'm going to buy the cheapest makeup possible and play with it. And I did. I remember just through, especially just summer. And when I first moved back here, I didn't have a job. So I was at home most of the time. And I would just spend most of the time just doing makeup, playing with clothes, different ideas. And so that it kind of, it started to make a little bit more sense that it wasn't because I was just interested in makeup. It was the way that I felt when I was wearing makeup, and it felt like I was a completely different person that made me feel like I was a better person. And I was always under the belief sort of thing, doing theater, watching shows and being like, I want to be them. Why can't I be them? And I always thought it was because I was a boy, and I thought, oh, if I was a boy, I'm never going to play those roles. I'm never going to do that. And then I kind of actually realized, watching Lady Gaga's performance at Coachella, I was watching it and started crying. And I was just like, it all clicks. It made me realize it wasn't because I was a boy. It was because I was a boy, but it was because I didn't want to be a boy. It was never about being a boy. And it kind of all was like one of those moments where in a movie where you're like, everything kind of just clicks and it's like, oh wow, that makes sense. And so I always knew what trans was, and I didn't know how I was going to go through my transition, how far along I was going to go. So I suppose I came out as trans, started expressing myself, you know, lots of makeup, high feminine clothes, dresses, etc. Playing with that idea, and then I moved out and started, was able to support myself and start doing it here and just being able to do my thing. And then I kind of came to the realization that, you know, I was doing this because I was trying to abide to what society thinks a woman should be and what women are seen as. And then I kind of just started thinking, well, you know, that doesn't necessarily equal being a woman wearing makeup. Women can wear makeup, or they can't, or they don't have to have long hair and they don't have to wear dresses. And so I started kind of, not necessarily backtracking, but kind of still buying feminine clothes and still trying to present as female as possible, but came to the realization that I'm not passing at the moment, so I don't have any kind of pressure on me to be a specific way. I could just do what I wanted and was able to express myself in that way. And I always say to myself, if I didn't get dumped in grade 12, I probably wouldn't have known that I was trans, because when you're with somebody, it's hard to think about yourself when you're always thinking about somebody else and what someone else will feel about that. And I think I kind of, my point was, even in the relationships that I was in high school, I was just like, oh, I'm definitely the girl in the relationship. And then started talking to other gay men, and they're like, that's not how we feel. We're still both guys. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I think that makes sense. And I think that kind of pinpoints what the issue is there. but yeah, no, grade 12 was a really good experience, and it made me realize kind of my placing in the world, that I wasn't always just going to be this trans person. I was going to be Leah. I was going to be somebody of purpose, not just a representation, a person with a voice and who I was. And so, I'm very glad that I went through the experiences that I did, because it made me passionate and it made me aware. and it made me strong, and it made me think, well, you know, if people want to disagree with how we live and who we are, then we just have to disagree with them and fight them back. That's the way that I've always been kind of living. I've always kind of felt like I just have to push back and just do your thing. You're a valid person. You're allowed to express yourself. And that's the thing. It's not like I'm walking around and hurting anyone. It's not like I'm walking around with jackets of spikes out and gonna hurt someone. I'm just trying to live. And, you know, even with the negativity that comes across with how trans women are represented and talked about and discussed, I have had more support and more positive discussions here than I have had negative ones. And I think that's really important to discuss, because there's not a lot of openly queer, visibly queer young people, which I think is that fear that everybody thinks that just because we live in a small town, no one's going to get it. If you allow people to have those discussions with you, even if they don't understand, and if they don't understand, that's okay. You know, that's how the world goes around. Everyone doesn't understand, but as long as they accept and allow you to be your person, you know, I've always been lucky that I've had really good allies, like my best friend Bradley. He's straight and he's, you know, the kindest person that I've ever met. He listens to absolutely everything, even if he doesn't understand it. And I think it's really good to have those allies that are not in the community. Allies are how people learn, you know. And I have lots of allies, and have created lots of allies just because I've been able to have an open discussion with people about things and be honest. And I think that's how I've been able to live myself honestly, is because I've always been able to be honest with others. And yeah. I used to get into lots of Facebook fights with people. I see it. You not necessarily disagreeing with what I'm saying, but disagreeing and being invalidating. You know, you see the slight remarks, you see the slight humor that people use. When it's not humor, it's derogatory, it's not nice, it's not kind. You know, I see it. Something came out about when, oh, there was, I don't know, people worrying about World War III, and, you know, they had these list of different people, and they were like, trans people won't fight because they're not men, or well, they're not women. And I was just like, this isn't, you do realize how many queer people are involved with military, with army, with navy, and you're just invalidating them because of what the media wants to represent you as what trans people are. I have never met a trans person who has been angry and just yells at people. I mean, on the other token, I've not really met many trans people, but I've never really interacted. I've seen people who are angry and they get it, but they're not violent, which is what, you know, is the same thing with feminism. You know, everyone just thinks that someone who's a feminist is now someone who wants to hate men. Well, then no, someone has taken that out of context, and now that's what you believe that out of context representation is. You need to realize that that's not what that is. You have to draw that back in and realize, but not everybody, again, is that cares, you know. I had to come to the realization is, if they want to say those things and they know what those things mean, they're saying that. They're not, oh, I didn't realize. They're saying that. That's what they're trying to say. They're trying to make people feel invalid. And I had to just come to the realization that, you know, that's fine. If you want to make me feel invalid, that's fine. I just have to validate myself more. You know, you just gotta fight fire with kindness, basically. As much as sometimes you just want to be like, fire with fire. Even in the gay, queer community, it's just that. People call it the gay community when it's not just gay people. You know, there's so much more to the community than just gay men or gay women. You know, bisexual, bi erasure is a huge thing, you know, and trans women and men as is a huge erasure as well. You know, I read up somewhere that in any kind of violence in regards to a trans person, 85% of the reports have misgendered them the whole the time, you know, and it's invalidating not being able to be represented in the correct way. But if you discuss people why those things affect you, you know, it's really hard sometimes to be able to discuss what hurts in a polite less. Actually, I learned that, and oh, I mean, I've always practiced it, but I watched the Australian Story with Courtney Act episode, which was, I don't know when it was released, but I watched it last night, the night before. And that's how she approaches things, or they approach things, as they say, well, you've just got to be polite with people. You've got to allow people to listen, because no one's going to listen to you if you're screaming at them. And I've learned that. I've learned that with my parents. My dad and I butt heads consistently, and we just yell at each other, and neither of us are listening. You know, that's... and that's still a masculinity, or I don't know if it's just masculinity, but that's still a trait that I've learned from growing up as a male. But, you know, it's so much easier to be able to discuss things if you're polite and you're calm. And obviously when things are really, really hurting you, it's so easy to get angry, because you just want to shake them and just like, please listen, just listen. But people need to start learning how to be kinder with people and allow people time. Not everyone's gonna turn around. I'm like that, you know, I don't understand why people straight away can't just change pronouns. But then I catch myself still doing it. Still, you know, not using Leah as the word, you know, not using the correct pronouns to introduce myself. And, you know, it's time. People take time. People learn things. So as long as they're trying and they're learning, you're just gonna give people credit. To allow that. And that's, I think, I like to think that we're becoming a little bit more of a society, especially in Australia, where we listen. You know, there's obviously the other thing, the other end of it is when people take, you know, highly racist, homophobic things and they're like, well, that's freedom of speech. I don't know. I don't think so. If you're derogatory to somebody, that doesn't allow you. You can say whatever you want, but if you get consequences from it, that's why. You know, you still have to get. If you say something, it's still you have consequences if it breaks a law or breaks a contract or harms somebody that, you know, you work for, sort of thing. You're not protected from that. And I think a lot of people forget that with freedom of speech. You're allowed to say whatever you want. But if you say something that is hurtful to others, you're going to face a negative reaction. You can't say those things without realizing that's what people are going to say and how people are going to feel about it. But I learned that from my dad. I learned that in other people, especially my dad, that you have to approach things in a calmer way. You know, I know with my parents, I'm always really just like 100. You know, always like, why can't you? And they're just like, breathe. I'm like, but you don't understand. And I like to think it's just because I'm comfortable in my home and with my family, I can just do whatever. I don't have to be a positive representation for anybody. I can just be as annoyed and angry as I want to. But I've had to. You have to allow people. If people want to learn and people want to accept you, then they'll come around. You can't teach people if they don't want to learn. That's you know, not everyone's going to want to, but you just have to allow them to think, well, that's their life. If they want to be like this, then that's them. At the end of the day, that's what they want. And if their life wants to be like that, then they face the repercussions of how they want to live. Trans women definitely face more issues with financial security, just acceptance than trans men. And I think that's just to do with being the fact that they're women at the end of the day. Society doesn't respect women. Society doesn't validate women. It's consistently trying to undermine women and has for ages. So then when someone's trying to be a woman, then that automatically, that's that misogyny. and that's sexism. And I think that's why trans women get it. It's got nothing to do with somebody's fears. I think it's just to do with the fact that they're fearful of a woman that makes them question things, you know? And it's a lot more, I don't want to say in your face, but more confronting with trans women, especially than with some trans men. Trans men, I don't like to say the luxury, because that's not necessarily really true. They still deal with gender dysphoria and the same difficulties that trans women do. But society accepts men and accepts people who present male and masculine, whereas they don't with women, you know. As soon as you look at the tabloids and you see newspapers, and the way that they talk and represent women is so far more demoralizing than what they do with men. And I've grown up listening to people like Madonna, Lady Gaga, Taylor Swift, and you notice the misogyny and the sexism with female musicians than you do with males. And you notice it, and it's so blatantly obvious. And I think that's why trans women face more difficulties, because they have to not only have to deal with being trans, but they have to deal with a way that society will accept them as women. And it's so hard. It's that idea of what they think a woman is. I remember when I cut my hair all off, I was bald. I'm not bald, but just had really short hair. And I remember every person who would say to me, you know, oh, you're trans, but you don't have long hair. I was like, do all women have long hair? Just because, and so that's how I learned, was like, well, no one, I could try as hard as I want to be what society thinks a woman should be, but that's not who I am. You know, I'm not always gonna wear 30-inch long wigs. I like having short hair some days I like having long hair. And I think that's why trans women face the issues that they do. I think that's why, especially trans women of colour, you know, in America, it's an epidemic on trans women, especially of colour. It's just awful seeing that. And it happens here too. They talk about the women that are killed, they forget to talk about the trans women who were also killed in Australia. You know, there's been at least 3 that I know of in the last 6 months. But they don't get represented in the Australian media because they're trans. And we all know why, and that's because of our media has an agenda. Stable income is a huge thing for trans women. It's a really big issue. So many trans women are unemployed, are homeless, you know, are afraid of being out. And that's scary to think that, you know, not everybody has those opportunities that I have been able to get. Whether that's because I was not presenting when I started, which I don't think has anything to do with, but that's always been, and I think it's to do with that feeling of I've always had a lot more privilege because of the way that I present. I'm not presenting to a higher extent. I know people who are in capital cities who are trans and are transitioning, and they don't have stable income. You know, they do struggle quite a lot, especially with now with the COVID-19 pandemic. A lot of them are entertainers working in drag and, you know, performing, and they just now don't have the work. You know, not every trans man presents as a man. You know, you still have trans men who still have feminine features or have a feminine voice. Like, God, I have to. I can't wait to start going to speech pathology so I can start talking at a higher tone and a higher pitch so I can sound more feminine. it's been very validating being able to have a safe workplace and somewhere to go where you know that you're always able to feel safe and validated, and just being able to walk home or being able to leave work and enjoy not just the work but the space and the way that people converse. No one has ever said anything except positive about the way that I present at work. I came out when I was 18, so that was like 3 years ago. And I didn't know how to transition. I didn't know what it was going to cost me, how much it was going to do, how much. And I know that people have told me it's also quite mentally exhausting. So I was like, well, you know, if I have to have days off, am I going to have work? You know, I can't take days off if people don't understand what I'm going through, sort of thing. And here, you know, I have spoken in my workplace, I have spoken to people and I've advised them this is what may happen. And they're just like, yep, you, if you need it, you take it, just let us know, sort of thing. And that's been extremely validating and just secure. You know, it's kind of the first time since I've moved out that I felt a little bit secure, which is a lot more than a lot of other people have. And I'm very grateful that I've had that experience and that chance to be able to do so. That was the discussion that I had with my parents, was that about transitioning. They're like, oh, people under 18 shouldn't be transitioning. And I'm just like, but you have not, you really don't know what puberty is like. I remember going through puberty just having no idea why I hated it, why I hated any kind of hair, or then why did I feel self-conscious that I didn't have hair, or why was I, what was going on? Why did I feel so negatively about my body and myself? And that's the thing, I never felt like I had like any kind of eating disorder, but I specifically tried not to make my body change until I was 18. I tried, you know, my dad used to say to me, oh, you know, why don't you go work out? Why don't you go and do lifts? Why don't you go exercise? Just, you know, I had used to be like, no, I don't want to change any of my body. I just want to keep it the exact same. I don't want it to change, because I was tall and skinny, which allowed me to feel more feminine presenting. Not that females aren't, not that. But I was like, no, don't change my body. I want it to keep it the same. And now that I've moved out and I can feed myself, I'm like, oh God, my body's changing. I'm gaining weight. What is going on? And I'm just like, oh no, my body is changing. And that's why I'm like, ah, HRT, now. Let's get this, let's stop it before it gets worse. I started becoming friends with people in theatre who have now came out as queer or in the community as however they present themselves. And I used to think, like, going through high school and just being like, and they're like, oh yeah, well, I've known all the time. I'm just like, why wouldn't you tell me, you know? So I didn't feel like I was the only one, you know? I understand people sometimes just want to do their thing and not live with labels, and that's totally acceptable and fine, and get that, and valid. But like, I didn't know anyone else. I was kind of by myself, and even at any other school, any kind of, there was a couple of gay guys who had came out, I'd try and get in contact with them and they'd be like, no, we're not interested. I'm just like, can we just like be friends? But I didn't know how to be friends with other gay people, because I didn't know how to be friends, you know, kind of with people who were like me, because I kind of, my first experience with meeting another gay person was that I dated them. So it was kind of like, oh, I have to date them. That's the only thing. That's about the only way that's going to work. But I get that now still, even with other gay men. They don't even want to talk to me. You know, I see them. I have friends who I'm very close with. But if I see them in person, they will just be like, hi, and that's it. And I think, and even when like I go out with them and it's just like small talk, it's just like, hi. And I'm just like, we have had in-depth conversations about life, and I thought we were really close. And it's kind of just like, I kind of got to a point where I was like, am I pushing people away? Is me being trans pushing people away? Is this what my life is going to be like if I keep living here? Am I consistently never going to have friends who are comfortable with being out with me? But then I started becoming friends with people who were just, they were allies. And I became friends with a couple of guys who were straight, you know, as for me being like, again, oh my God, they're so nice. I must date them. That must be what's happened. And I have told all of them, that's how I felt. And then it's just kind of been like, no, we'll just be friends. And, you know, and that's the expectation, is that because I'm friends with them, they think that, so everyone thinks they're gay. Or we're dating. I'm like, but we're friends. We're just hanging out. We're not being romantic, like, you know. And then we kind of go along with it, and they're just like, oh, I love it when he does this, and they post it on Instagram, and just, you know, kind of just play along with that narrative, because you're like, it's stupid. It's been weird having lots of male friends, and then, but then it's interesting because I have lots of straight male friends, but then I have been friends with, or had known and got to know lots of other gay or bi men. But as soon as kind of I'm visible and we're visibly seen together, it's kind of, you know, pushed back, don't really want to be, you know. And I've got a friend who has said that their mum has seen me in town and they're like, really lovely, and she thinks that you're really amazing. It's like, so why didn't you come over and talk to me if you saw me in town? You know, it's that, like, you know, you want to still be, you want to feel validated and not just this thing that people look at and it's just like, you know, an animal in a cage. Oh, they look amazing. Like, I'm a person. You can come talk to me. I'll say hello. I won't bite. You know,
yeah, exactly.
It's kind of, and that's what I get all the time now. As soon as people have seen me or have met me once, it's like, we're friends, we're going to hang out, we're just going to be like this, we're going to be besties because you're so open and you're so amazing. And I'm just like, hello, I'm Leah. Yeah. You know, you want to still get to know people on a personal, you know, level. You don't want to just be this trans person and they're so out and they're so lovely. And I get that support is really good, but I would also like to be known as a person and still spoken to like I'm a person and valid and, you know, not just something that someone can look at and think is pretty but never touches. I obviously, growing up, I was very much involved with what gay men did, and I was looking at it growing up, seeing what was happening, what was changing, and I just saw, you know, these gay men were just coming together, going out, getting drunk, and then not doing anything of some substance. And I was just like, I don't want to be involved with that. That's not what I like. If you want to go do that, that's fine. You go do your thing. But that's not a community to me. That's not what a gay community is to me, or a queer community. And I was always very much of the belief that being queer should connect everyone, you know, allies as well. It's not just, you know, I see it all the time. People are like, oh, we don't want straight women at gay bars. I'm like, okay, well, obviously you've never faced any injustice where straight women have actually helped you. You've obviously been able to be comfortable enough in your life where you've never had to have that worry of allies. Great for you, but not everybody else feels the same. You know, I like having other queer people just as much as I like having straight friends. You know, you like things because of who they are as a person, not their sexuality. You know, it's the exact same, that discrimination against others because they're not, and I'm just like, you're making it actually worse. Come back to the community and let's discuss things. I think it's really important because I wish I had a community of people to talk to. I always was very afraid of it. I know that when I first came out, my mum was like, why don't you start getting involved with, I'm like, I don't know how to meet other trans people. I don't know. Where do I find that information? Who do I talk to? What, where? And the first thing was like, why don't you go talk to Leslie, like my aunt? And I was like, she's trans. She'll probably get it. But she is also she was probably about 60 at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, she's not, doesn't see if I want, if I want to meet people, I want people my own age. Now we kind of are at an age where we can start coming out at a younger age and start transitioning or start expressing yourself in whatever way you so wish and love whoever you want at a younger age. And so I think having a queer community is really good. It'll also not only give queer people a sanctuary, it'll also make people aware that it's Tasmania is not just, there's no gay people. You know, a lot of people think that because there's only Hobart and they have flamingos, that's it. That's where gay people are. I'm like, no, we're everywhere. You know, queer people are everywhere. We're not just there. I know when I had my friend Hayden do drag nights in Launceston a couple of years ago, and I started first meeting other queer people who, and I was like, oh my god, there's other people. There's others, you know? And I was just like, even if they were just bi women, or if they were just allies, or, you know, or they were just drag queens. And I was just like, but that's still part of the community. That's still really good and valid. And that's what I want. That's what I would want from a queer community, is people just for a chance to be able to openly reach out. Just because we have marriage equality doesn't mean that all trans people are validated. You know, I'm trying to figure out how to change my name. And I know in Tasmania they changed the laws that you can change the gender on your birth certificate without invasive surgery, so any kind of surgeries. But I was born in Queensland, which it hasn't changed. So for me to do that, I would have to have invasive surgery. So I could go and legally change my name, that's fine, but I wouldn't be able to change the gender on my birth certificate, which is like, well, that's kind of the point. And any kind of surgeries is looking at least 5 to 10 years away. So it kind of is like, you know, it doesn't, and that just shows that there's so much more that needs to be done. You know, I know when the Tasmanian government put out that they were doing that, they were changing the ways that people can change their genders, or they were given the option for people to have a gender on their birth certificate. Yes, their sex would still be valid for people, doctors and people who need it, if they're needing it medically. But, and I just remember people just being like, no, people need to know what their genders are. And I'm just like, no, they don't. Do you know how much it would be nice for just a kid just go and say, hi, my name is this, not, oh, I'm a boy. Because imagine if they were wearing makeup. They're just like, oh yeah, if I was like a child and I was involved with makeup and things, I'd just be like, hi, my name is Leah. And there would be no, you know, oh, you're a boy in makeup. They'd be like, is he a boy? Is she a girl? And I was just like, but that would just be so much easier for children who are going through that, because people, trans kids feel it from a young age. There's always that feeling of that not knowing where you're sitting and where you're placing, you know. You never feel like you're a part of the boys, but then you don't know if you're a part of the girls because you're a boy, you know, or this, vice versa. You know, it's that, and I think it shows that there's still so much more to go with what society accepts and doesn't accept. You know, as soon as marriage equality was gone through, great, that's amazing, that's good, but that's a step. That's not a final goal. There's still lots to come. You know, religious discrimination bill is coming through, which is not anything to do with religion at all. It's basically just racism and homophobia put in under as religion. Because I grew up in a religious family. My nan is very religious. She was the person that I was most scared of coming out to. I was just like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, she's so Catholic. Is she gonna be able to? And I told her, and she's like my biggest support. Like, she's always talking to me about it. She's always happy to have these discussions. And it makes me realize that it's not religion. It's got nothing to do with religion. And you know, I am, one of my nan has said to me, you know, if you know, religion isn't about loving people, then it's not religion. The person who I was at 14 would be extremely proud and happy of the person that I am now. I've worked really hard to be able to put myself in a good position, not just financially, but just mentally. You know, when I was 16, 17, I had no idea what my life was going to be like. I still don't really when I think about it, but I know that I know who I am, and it makes it so much easier to be like, well, now I know who I am. Now I can work at what I want to be and where I want to go and what I want to go on that journey with, because at least I've started that journey.
Do you have a message to anyone listening?
I just want to say that you are valid no matter where you are on your journey. You don't have to be what society thinks you should be. If you are not ready to be who you want to be yet, that's cool. That's okay. You don't have to be out to be you. You don't have to be a different person because you're not ready. You should still feel valid. And I get the fears and the anxieties that come with not being able to be you because you're fearful of other things. And I get that. But what I've always realized is that I would rather die being who I am than living a day as who I'm not. You know, I would rather be able to go and feel like I'm living every day as authentic, but taking that day at a time, not feeling like I have to be at my journey's end at a specific time. You know, everybody has different things. And best thing I would say is, allow yourself to work, allow yourself to feel, allow yourself to just talk about it, try and talk about it, even if it's not with, even if you feel like you don't have anyone to talk to, try and reach out, try and find support. You know, I'm very happy to talk to anyone who's struggling with their identity. You know, I get it. It's a really confusing thing to feel like, well, why don't I work? Why do I not function the same way as everybody else? But also realize there are lots of really positive things about being queer. It allows, I think being queer, I don't think it's being queer is superior to being straight, but I think being queer allows you to feel differently. I think it allows you to be more empathetic if you allow it. You've got to allow yourself to feel and go through that process. Being trans is hard. Being queer sometimes is just hard, but you still got to do it. You can't not discuss who you are, because it'll lead away and it will get to you and you'll get to a point where it will be too much. Just allow yourself to breathe, take each day at a time, and just be who you are in what makes you comfortable. Don't push yourself out if you're not ready to be pushed out. I was pushed out. You know, I was told that I was gay at 14 and that was it. That's all everybody would think about me. And that's still what people still think about me. And, you know, I say to people, oh, I'm queer. And they're like, oh, you know, what does that mean? I was like, well, being a bisexual transgender woman is a bit of a mouthful. it's a lot. And it's a lot for people to process being trans and bi as well. Who you are makes you who you are. That sounds really like that didn't make sense, but being queer is a part of your personality. You know, I grew up not knowing my place in the world because I didn't know where I wanted to go and where I wanted to be. But then I came to the realization that makes a part of me. That makes who I am, not being the same as everybody else, but then trying to find those people that may not be the same, but they get you. They get what you're going through. And so that would be my message, is to just take every day as it comes. You'll get there eventually, whether that takes, you know, 6 months, a year, 2 years, 5 years, as long as you're getting to a point where you're comfortable, that's okay. Just feel comfortable. Don't try and push it too hard, because even though it's really, really hard, you don't want to push yourself out when you're not ready. This is probably the most public that I've been about who I am. Obviously, it's daunting putting it out in the world that you are who you are, but I'm comfortable in myself knowing that other people are going to benefit from hearing a positive queer person talking about their experiences. And just having somebody who knows, you know, who gets it, who knows who you are, and feel free to reach out if it need be. So, you know, that's fine as well. Go you know, listen to all the podcasts with queer life stories. Any queer life story is important to your, whether they're not the same as how you present or how you feel, it's still good to know that people are still a part of the community.
Brilliant. Thank you.
It's okay. Thank you.
If you're struggling with your mental health, please contact Lifeline on 13 1114 or Beyond Blue on 1300 224636. Both services are available 24/7. If you would like to share your story, talk about your experiences, or would just like to get in touch, you can email me at queerlifestories@outlook.com or find us on Facebook or Instagram. Just search for Queer Life Stories. This podcast is a no-budget, one-man production, but you can support this podcast by following, donating, or subscribing to it at Patreon. That's patreon.com/queerlifestories. If you are listening in Northwest Tasmania and would like to be part of an LGBT plus community, social and support group, search Facebook for Northwest Pride. In Tasmania, if you want support for your sexuality, gender or intersex status, you can contact Working It Out on 03 6231 1200. Q Life provide anonymous and free LGBTI peer support and referrals for people across Australia wanting to talk about sexuality, gender identity, relationships and more. They're available 3 p.m. to midnight every day on 1800 184 527 or web chat with them at qlife.com.au. You can hear future episodes of Queer Life Stories at Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Please follow, rate, and review. It does really help. We will be back soon. Take care of yourself and each other.